I'm Megan Tackett, hosting Everything Under the Sun this afternoon. It's turned into a beautiful afternoon, I might add. And I am really excited. I feel like this is going to be a really meta show because we're going to be talking about radio on radio, but a different kind of radio. And I am currently joined in the station right now with Clark, who is president of, and since you've got my cheat sheet, I'm going to mess this up. What exactly is the correct name of your organization?
It's the Ski Country Amateur Radio Club.
Ski Country Amateur Radio Club. Thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure.
So you are a ham radio guy.
Yeah, I've been a ham since 76. I initially got into ham radio back in Delaware. That's why I have my call signs K3NI. A three call sign is New Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania. Yeah. But now I'm a transplant. I've been here for, since 86, off and on, and now permanent residence. And I'm joined by my wife, KB3UDU, Pamela. And we're both radio amateurs, and we're both in the Ski Country Amateur Radio Club. And, of course, today we're here to talk about our special event, which is going on this weekend.
Yes, and it sounds like so much fun. Can you talk about it?
Yeah, it's an annual event. It's set up by the National Ham Organization, the ARRL, which stands for American Radio Relay League, which was actually founded around 1910 or so, before the First World War. And they put on a contest. It's called Field Day, and it is a really good demonstration of what amateur radio is about in providing emergency communication. Mm-hmm. So we spend the time in this particular weekend. We're going to be up in Missouri Heights, and we basically are camping out there using generators and solar power and battery power and even low power rigs and satellites and just all kinds of different forms of communication. And we get points for the number of contacts that we make.
Okay.
We also get points for other things that we do, like, for instance, public announcements, like what I'm doing right now, is worth, I think, 100 points. And that's equivalent to 50 CW or Morse code contacts or 100 SSB or phone contacts. So there's a complicated set of rules that goes along with it, but it all emphasizes emergency preparedness. Plus, it's a good opportunity for our club to get out and have a weekend camping, and we have a potluck dinner on Saturday. Oh, and I might add, the contest starts at noon on Saturday and goes this Saturday, and it goes through till noon Sunday.
So it's a whole 24-hour thing.
Yeah, and it's through the night.
Wow. You can't pre-bank points for this interview. You can't go in saying, well, I mean, I've already made a lot of contacts.
No, not that way. We do get points for this, even though it's ahead of time.
Okay.
But so that and any other announcement we might do in the paper, like, for instance, the Sopra Sun, there's an article in there, which Will has put together for me. And that's really nice. We really appreciate the support and the ability to announce that. And we're really looking forward to seeing members of the general public come up and visit us.
Yeah. So if somebody's listening and they're like, I am not totally sure what this is, but I want in. It's up in Missouri Heights. I heard you just kind of go up the road and follow the signs.
Yeah, it's, I'll describe it as best I can. fact is, I think it's in this article here, but you go up the road to Missouri Heights. You go past the reservoir up there. The road changes from asphalt to dirt road or gravel road. And right there, there's a gated community to your left. You go through the gate, which should be open to the public through Saturday and into Sunday. And you go up over a hill and you go down into another drainage area, actually. And there's a turn to the right with a bunch of flamingos. I don't know who put those flamingos there, but traditionally they've been there every year, so I know they're going to be there this time.
I feel like I'm getting taken into like a Tolkien novel or something. There's a hobbit hole on your right.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, what's nice about it is that is a really good area for propagation. It's high, and it's got a good line of sight right to the horizon. So for radio purposes, it's excellent. So anyway, don't let me interrupt my directions here.
Oh, yes.
You go by the flamingos to the right, up over the hill, and you can't miss the tents, the campers, and the antennas. You might hear a little bit of noise from the generators, although the new generators that that are for sale now that are just so quiet, they're great. So we have a really good time, and it's an intense 24-hour. We have a sign-up sheet for operators. We do shifts. People come and go. Some people stay the whole weekend. Some people just stay the first night. And then that's it, or they may stay the whole weekend. Other than that, it's a real good opportunity to operate, especially if you've got one of the beginning licenses, you know, that only allows you to use basically 2-meter FM radio, like my wife has. She's got a tech license. She can operate HF, and it's worldwide communications. So we would make contacts with Europe, Australia, Japan, you know, and really far places like Canada and Mexico, or maybe Cuba. I've worked into Eastern Europe and that sort of thing on field day. So it's not an uncommon situation. However, with the sunspot cycle as it is right now, it's pretty quiet.
Really? How much does something like a sunspot cycle come into play with
Hugely.
That?
Hugely.
Wow.
Hugely.
So you're also an amateur
there's
astronomer?
This thing called the minimum usable or maximum usable frequency. It's MUF, it's called. And the higher the frequency, the farther the skip is.
Okay.
And the sunspots affect that considerably. There is also things like meteor scatter, which will work in the higher bands on 6 meters and 2 meters. And every time a meteor goes in, there's all these ions that are created. And for a few minutes afterwards, you get reflections that will allow you to access different parts of the world. It's all very random. It's all very happenstance. And, you know, if you're out looking for DX, which is long distance, it's very exciting.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
So you see a little bit of that all through the weekend. I mean, there will be times when the bands open up. Certain bands will be really good during the day and other ones at night. And so there will be a lot of activity during the day, maybe on 40, and later on it's on 20 and then 20 meters. I've got to stay away from this ham talk.
I know, I'm always like, talk to me like I'm five.
I'm talking to the general public here. But anyway, it's all radio lore. And you get an opportunity to see how it works and see how hams will set up emergency stations, run on generators, have hand antennas available. These things have been set up and tuned for the appropriate frequencies that we're using. And they're ready to go. Should we have an event here like the most likely would be a wildfire and that sort of thing, where we would supply extra communications for the firefighters and local hospital and rescue people. The other thing that we do occasionally is, you know, like the, for instance, during Katrina, when the hurricane hit, there are people in the New Orleans area that wanted to get messages out to their relatives and loved ones outside of New Orleans, and the communications were all jammed.
Right.
So we had hams all over the country standing by to take message traffic and pass on welfare information to relatives. And those go on like weeks after those nasty events.
Oh, there were people missing and like otherwise unheard of for a long time. It was incredibly scary. Yeah. So no, that's...
The other thing that our club has this network of repeaters. A repeater is a deal where you take a handheld or low power, say a VHF rig, and it hits a tower on, say, sunlight. And then from sunlight, it is repeated. That's where the word repeater comes from. And it's broadcast a much wider area. And then we have the ability to connect one repeater to another one. So we have a network of repeaters. So you can address someone in eastern Utah or all the way past Vail on the repeater system. Huh. So that's really nice, especially my wife and I find it convenient when we're traveling from, so we live south of Redstone. Mm-hmm. And as you come into Carbondale, you get into your first, you know, cell phone. And so if you want to get somebody on the road in between, ham radio is the only thing available right now.
I hadn't thought of that. And yeah. All of my friends that live in that area up in Marble and Redstone are always like, oh, it doesn't matter. They'll get cell phone signal and it'll still end up skipping over me. And, you know, I hadn't considered that ham radio is an active communication device in our backyard, basically.
Yeah. And what's neat is they have a thing called EchoLink, which connects the ham radio in the repeater system via the internet. So if I were visiting back east, like for instance, 2 weeks ago, we have a check-in on a net that we do every Sunday night. And I might mention that we have breakfast meetings that Will attended this week at Tuesday at the Village Inn at 8 o'clock, and we had 20 members there. So he had quite an interview. That's where the basis of that article came from.
20 so we people showed up to the Village Inn in Glenwood Springs at 8 a.m.
That's normal. Yeah. Oh, wow. Every week.
Wow.
We have a really active club here. I can't push it too strongly. I have seen other clubs in other areas like back east, mm-hmm. and they may have been really active once, but to be active right now is unusual. And this particular club has got a lot of really enthusiastic hams that operate in all kinds of different modes, do all kinds of different activities. And we have really good technical presentations once a month at the U.S. Bank at 10 o'clock. I think it's the second Monday of every month in general. Mm-hmm. Then there are certain, like, for instance, Field Day is our monthly meeting this month. And then we have a Christmas potluck at Sue and Bob Ludke's house in Christmas. So
you're communicating over radio, but there's a lot of face-to-face as well, it sounds like, within this club.
It's a social thing.
I love it. I'm also so curious as to what your personal draw was that got you into this world.
Into the ham radio?
Exactly.
Oh, well, if you're going to talk about me.
I am.
I was introduced to ham radio at about 8. My dad was a ham in the 20s. Wow. And we were back east hauling dirt and azaleas and mulch and that kind of stuff in this hillside of an azalea garden that he put together, this beautiful place. And we just sold it last year, but... it was wonderful. And halfway up the hill, it was obviously on a hill, we would stop with a wheelbarrow and he would talk about inductance and capacitance and resonant frequencies and all this stuff and how ham radio used to be with back in the days when the batteries were made out of test tubes and lead plates and he had some sort of a chemical diode. I have no idea exactly how that worked. And he would transmit and then plug in his charging system when he was receiving. And he worked rotary spark gap.
What?
A rotary spark gap is a periodic excitation of a resonant frequency coil and capacitor combination. And if you got the sparks going at just the right frequency, it would match the natural frequency of the coil and capacitor combination. And it would send out on that frequency your code signal, okay, Morse code in those days, on that and pretty much the whole band. I mean, it was pretty dirty. But he, you know, I, as a kid, I grew up finding all these hand-wound transformers and choke coils and stuff lying in his junk box. But my dad at the time was a research director in DuPont, and he had a lot of other things to do besides ham radio. So by the time I came along, he had lost the interest in operating every day. But I got started on it, and I practiced Morse code, and I didn't quite get the license. I needed a what we call an Elmer, and my dad just didn't do it. But when I went to work for DuPont later on in 76, the local site there had a club, and just walked down the hall one day and I heard Morse code, and I said, what's going on here? Oh, we're getting ready for you know, code practice so that we can get our license upgrades. And I said, sign me up. Huh. And so in 76, I got my license, and I think about 2 years later, after two field days, say as a novice, I went to field day back east, and I operated, and I made about, oh, I don't know, eight or 10 contacts, you know. It was all Morse code, though. I mean, and it was with my homebrew rig and all of that, so I thought this is really cool. I mean, I used to have a real adrenaline rush when Friday would come around, and, oh, man, I'm ready to go. My antennas are all tuned up, and I'm left-handed, so I learned how to send with my right hand on my key. And I had a pencil that I would hold in my left hand. And so I'd log my contacts with my left hand, and I would send with my right hand. And for some reason, although I had learned using my left hand sending on field day, I don't know what the geometry worked out so that I didn't have to think about it. I could send just as well with my right hand as I was ambidextrous in that case. That was kind of cool. So that's how I got into it. It was through a local club. And then when we moved out here, I found right away, within, I think, the first week we were camping here, I got on the local repeater, and people like Al Scholes, K0 AMA, showed up from, he was living in Redstone at the time, and I just got sucked into the ham group out here, and, you know. And a couple of years ago, I came to a meeting late, and I got elected president. So, I mean,
that's what you get.
That's my joke, but it was a real honor, actually.
Yeah. How long have you been serving as president?
It's been a couple of years now. Okay. And maybe it's going on three. Time flies so fast when you're having fun, you know. And I know I've been elected twice.
Excellent. Do you think there's a reason that this particular area has cultivated such a robust ham community as opposed to like some of your experiences out east?
Yeah, there must be.
Right?
There must be, because it is such an anomaly. First of all, we have a lot of people who have retired here from industry that was heavily into electronics and that sort of thing. Okay, so that explains part of it. Some of it's military, ex-military people who were also in industry. But I think I personally would credit people like Bob Ludke, who has driven this. You know, it's like the physics lectures that are done up in Aspen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's really good at finding speakers and topics and things for our meetings, and so we've always had a really busy, active investigatory, I think is the right word, group. And you know, there's so many new modes and things that are available in ham radio that I haven't touched on. I mean, it's not all just, you know, Morse code keys and microphones. There's digital modes. And the digital modes are always computerized, and our logging now is done computer by computer. And so there's, I don't know how many different modes of, besides teletype, that are digital modes. But those digital modes, when you can hardly hear the signal or you just have a vague idea there's somebody there, you let your computer send out, and it has error correction and repeat capabilities, and it takes over where the human mind just can't really function that well, or the ear. And the messages go through you. The conversation is finished. The contact is done. And I've seen things where people take trips, say, to Australia, and they send pages of text in a matter of minutes.
Wow.
In an update of what they're doing. And I haven't gotten into, you know, like the automatic positioning things, GPS kind of stuff that works with your your radio, your rig supplies a GPS signal, and then that goes into your, I haven't done this myself, but it goes into your local computer system, and it logs your location. You might be mobile, so it keeps sending out your location, and it's somewhere in like Norway, there's somebody that's got a website that updates your position and other hams' positions all over the world. So you go on, you sign on and take a look. You can see where your buddy is down in Yuma. he's avoiding the winter. You can see when he goes from one camp to another. That's kind of neat. Or as I've thought, you know, you could get your daughters to get a ham license and stick a APRS system in their rig or in their car, and you can figure out where they are. And actually, you know, being a retired couple, we were traveling around. It would be a good idea if we were on a long trip to just run that, so that, you know, instead of telling somebody before you go out on a hike, right, at least you know where the car was last part.
Sure. Yeah. Do you have any? Have you cultivated any like sort of remote buddies that you've made contact with, you know, more than one time over the course of the years that you haven't met? Or is it truly pretty random, just one-off, you know, quick connections?
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of both. Sometimes, you know, you have, you make a contact with somebody in Germany, and the next thing you know, I was going on business, and I'd go, well, I know where that person is. And if you have their name and call sign, you can look up their address and send them a note in advance that you're coming by and visit, and I've done that.
Cool.
You know, I've spent time in California in the 80s. I used to carry a 2-meter rig in my briefcase. Pam gave me the briefcase for my birthday so that it would fit my radio, and I had this mag mount, and I'd hook it up to the rental car, and I ended up, you know, 2 or 3 hours of driving back and forth, you know, like from L.A. to San Diego or something like that. And I get into a conversation with different hams and meet all kinds of people and just carry on a conversation the whole way, because this was just California is crazy with the number of repeaters.
Oh, I bet. It's kind of got that reputation, even for a layman like me. So, no, that's neat. So for listeners who have been fascinated and are like, hey, I want to be an amateur mechanical engineer and astronomer and radio person and want to learn more, follow the way past the flamingos and through the gate past the flamingos, and it's going Saturday to noon, all kinds of activity up in Missouri.
If you're looking for information on the club or where field day is going to be, on the net, K0RV.org.
Perfect.
Go there and take a look at field day. There's a I just looked at it, and I printed it out, actually. It's right here. But it's got directions, got picture of the group that you'd be with, and also the gang at breakfast. So
that's fantastic.
All the information necessary is there.
Clark, thank you so much. This has been a real pleasure.
Oh, it's always been a pleasure being here. Thank you so much, Megan.
Thank you. Stay tuned. Give me just like 30 seconds to transition here. You are listening to Everything Under the Sun, but we're not quite done yet. We are a bi-weekly show, so every other Thursday, the first and third Thursday of the month, you can tune in and just kind of pick up on the stories between the pages of the newspaper. And I love what a robust local media platform and landscape that we have. I am joined here with April Crowe-Spalding again. Thank you for rejoining the studio.
Yeah. I had to run home and get a different hat because I'm here in a whole different capacity than I was a half hour ago.
Well, you literally wear a lot of hats. You are a board member for the Soper Sun, if people didn't know that, among all kinds of other things that you keep your hands in. And I was wanting to talk to you because you are, I think, our newest board member.
We have a couple new ones, but I am a newer board member. And I have loved the Soper Sun ever since it came, 10 years now?
Yeah, you know? Just celebrated our 10th birthday.
We just had our 10th birthday. And I really feel like it actually goes very well hand in hand with Katie and Kay. I think that a brother-sister, you know.
Relationship.
Yes,
definitely.
Very, very good.
Definitely.
And, you know, it's funny because just this morning I was at a business here on Main Street here in Carbondale, and we were talking about the Soper Sun, and somebody said to me, well, I don't really read newspapers, you know, it's sort of a generational thing. I said, really? You don't read the Soper Sun? He goes, oh, well, yeah, I read the Soper Sun.
Of course I read the Soper Sun.
So this person turned to one of his employees that looked to be, I don't know, maybe 30 or something, and said, do you read newspapers? And she goes, yeah, not really. She goes, I probably, you know, on my hand, five, you know, my whole life. And I said, you don't read the Soper Sun? She goes, oh, well, I read the Soper Sun.
So the moral I'm hearing is that it is so easy to take things that are just part of the community for granted.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, and then somebody mentioned yesterday that one of the cool things about the Soper Sun is it's weekly. Mm-hmm. We're nonprofit. Mm-hmm. Those are all super cool things about us. But also, people keep the Sun around.
Yes.
You pick it up on Thursday and it's on your table all week because you want to know what's going on. You want to show everybody your picture that's in the paper. And, you know, but we are a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that as a nonprofit, we have to ask, please support the Sun. And we are right now in the, we want to close this up by
the solstice.
The solstice, which, wow, that's deadline. Tomorrow.
That's an aggressive deadline.
It is an aggressive deadline. As a reporter, that would be how you put that. But, you know, we more than appreciate your donations. It's what keeps the paper coming out every week. And there's so many levels. $5, $20, you can become an honorary publisher with a recurring yearly gift. There's so many things that you can do to make sure that the Sun comes out. And the Sun comes out. And if you haven't noticed, we have got a brighter, newer, larger paper.
Yes. That's just one more thing that people kind of take for granted. But it is because of, you know, our supporters, both our advertisers and our donors, that allowed us to go to that nice bright paper stock and make our ads and our stories and our photos pop all that much more. I so appreciate hearing your feedback as somebody newer in the community.
I love it. I mean, like I said, I mean, I'm on the board and I still can't wait till Thursday mornings and go pick up my Soper Sun just to see. And it was so great to get the new quality paper in time for Mother's Day, and everybody's pictures were so good.
Oh my gosh, weren't those beautiful?
Megan, we appreciate everything you do for us, and
thank you.
The Soper Sun. Help us meet our goal.
Yay, local journalism. Okay, that's it. That was my shameless plug. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you, Clark, for joining me, and have so much fun on the field day.